Welcome to On the Beat, where we bring you a different Buffalo Bills beat reporter every week, exclusively on the Overreaction Sports Network.
Well, what is going on, everybody? Welcome. Welcome, everybody, into On the Beat, brought to you exclusively on the Overreaction Buffalo Sports Network, a show where we bring you an exclusive interview with a different Bills beat reporter or journalist every single week, and we talk about the topics swirling around our beloved Buffalo Bills. My name is Joe Miller, and you can find me on Twitter at Joe Miller Wired. That guy directly next to me is John Fina. You can find him on Twitter at John Fina. But it is so good to have all of you with us. Please do us a favor. Please like, please subscribe, whatever platform you are consuming this vidcast or podcast on. Please do us a favor. Please hit the thumbs up. Please subscribe so that you don't miss a single moment. But it is so good to have all of you with us. Welcome in. And right now joining us, sports anchor from WGRZ Channel 2 right here in Buffalo, New York, a guy who I can from firsthand knowledge confirm knows all the choreography to Bye 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 by NSYNC. Ladies and gentlemen, John Scott. John, not many people know that about you, but they do now.
They do now. Yeah, I'll give it a little something like that to start. Hey, I'm a man of many talents. My backstory, actually, growing up, I was a lot of music. My family's musical. My mom's a music teacher. So love sports, chose it as a profession, but I got the music in my bag as well.
Yeah, it was. It was for charity. It was karaoke for charity. Jay Spencer King put it on. You got selected to do Bye Bye Bye. And it was amazing. But yes, what one heck of a memory. John Fina, how are you tonight?
Man, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm just happy to be here with John. Two Johns in the house. We got three J's no matter what we do, Joe. How about
take it away from him. JX3 every day, all day long, whether it's all a Jerry, a John, a Joe. Got to get some Jakes up in here. But real quick before we get started. So that hockey game on Monday night, I know you were watching it. John was watching it. Jerry was watching it. I was watching it. There's something about a game seven, specifically when you talk about like one team being up three to nothing, then losing three straight. There's a lot of history involved. And I'm going to be honest and say, I don't know if it's just being a Bills fan, but there's something to me wanting to see the worst thing possible happen. So I was rooting for the Oilers last night, hoping that like any more we can diminish 13 seconds type stuff for me. Wide right. If we can diminish as much stuff as possible by like, did you see what the Florida Panthers did in the Stanley Cup? Like, what were your quick thoughts on that game? A lot of Sabres in that game. Former Sabres.
To me, I'm a fan of greatness. And even if I'm not a fan of the player, I like to recognize the greatness and see it succeed. And so Connor McDavid is probably the greatest hockey player I've ever seen in my generation. I caught the tail end of Gretzky growing up, you know, early 90s as well. So Sidney Crosby's obviously great, but McDavid just does things even in this cup final as the Conn Smythe winner in defeat that make you go, I don't know if I've ever seen anyone do that. So I was really hoping that we could get off the conversation with another elite all-time athlete in their sport of they've never won the whole thing. And was pulling for Connor McDavid. I will say, though, seeing the reaction and emotion from Kyle Okposo hoisting the cup was super cool, too.
Yeah. John, what were your thoughts? Fina. I got to call you Fina. So it'll be John and Fina for the show. That way we can keep you guys straight.
To be fair, I'm not a huge hockey fan. I have deepest respect for those guys. And it's just insane what they can do on the ice. I too, was rooting for the Oilers. And I'll tell you, my reasoning is quite different. You know, in a sport like hockey, where I'm not a big fan, I honestly turn it on and I pick my team by who has the better uniforms. I mean, is that shallow enough for you? But
I get down with that.
I did pay pretty close attention to the game. And, you know, I sometimes, having been a player at the highest level, I try not to get too emotionally invested, because once I do, you know how it is. I mean, sports take you to the highest elation and the deepest sorrows, right? And you know, when a little story for you, John, I didn't have anything to do with the Bills or podcasting, and I was just a casual Bills fan, even though I love them still. And then this jack wagon upstairs to the side says, want to do a podcast, and now I'm emotionally invested. So, you know, cuts both ways. I am happy for the ultimate winners, though. I mean, game seven in any of the sports, whether it's basketball, hockey, or who else?
Oh, did we just lose Fina? Just
baseball.
We know baseball. we know where he was going with that. So we'll see if Fina comes back. One last thing, just kind of wrap that up. You talked about Connor McDavid winning the Conn Smythe, which is a little bit embattled today, just in the sense that obviously didn't have a point in the last two games, in game six, game seven. And there's a lot of people feeling that with him being on a losing team and really not, I don't want to say not showing up, that's not the way to say it, but not showing up on the stat sheet. You being a sports journalist, sports reporter, any thoughts on that real quick before we move to the Buffalo Bills?
I think it was almost a product of, even though the Panthers won and there were good to great performances, there weren't consistent good to great performances, right, one through right. seven on Florida else. Side of things as well. So if you're going to nitpick between, well, McDavid wasn't great 6 and 7, but then maybe Verhaeghe or Barkov or whatever that may also have been in the mix on the Florida side of things, well, they weren't consistent maybe during the lull that allowed the Oilers to get back into it. I think it's also a misconception, and if you're not a big hockey fan, it's not for the Stanley Cup final. It's for the playoffs in totality. It's given to the player at the end of the Stanley Cup because they played the most games, and usually they go hand in hand. So you have to also look at, would the Oilers have even been in that position in a Game 7 or in the Stanley Cup in totality had he not had one of the greatest playoff encompassing performances over the past month plus? That's why Connor McDavid won it. And I think when you look at it in that capacity, it's easier to stomach and say, oh yeah, I remember what I saw him pulling out night in, night out over the course of this magical run by Edmonton.
Super good. Talking with John Scott, sports anchor for Channel 2 here in Buffalo. Going to pivot, and we're going to talk some Buffalo Bills. And I'd like to start just – there's been a lot of conversation and topic and just around this idea of new faces and new energy. We've heard it from Coach. We've heard it from Brandon. We've heard it from Josh. We've heard it from a lot of the players. Do you attribute just kind of like that energy, the new faces and stuff like that? Is it because they're new and there's new faces in the building, or is it a situation where these new faces are here and they kind of get a feeling or a sense that, hey, you know what? There's some open spots. There's some opportunity. There's some competition where there's a starting spot that I could grab if I give 100% right now. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's probably a little bit of both. I actually asked Brandon Bean when we wrapped things up at minicamp, have you sensed a different energy in the building because of all the new faces? And I think you're right. It's been a great thing, the consistency that this roster, especially at the key places and with the key players, has had over this fantastic run as they've won division title after division title. But I think it's natural that, I'm not saying they were complacent, but you're running through the motions, especially this time of year. You know the playbook. You know the players. You have the camaraderie. Allen doesn't need to work fine with Stephon Diggs or Gabe Davis and Dawson Knox and the offensive line. And the defense already knows Micah and Jordan are pointing out any and everything under the sun with Milano and Tremaine for so long in the middle. So I do think it's allowed those open positions with these new guys fighting for things that are absolutely up for grabs, on top of the guys that are some of the few carryovers, to be like, all right, I have to work with this guy. I have to learn this guy. This is, and it's so large amount of the new faces that are not just, hey, we're backfilling the roster, that legitimately are going to be called upon to contribute, maybe not superstar level, but be key cogs in this wheel throughout the year. I think it's only natural. I mean, I'll just say this. I was at a TV station for 10 years. I had very great experiences. I had a huge jolt of energy coming here to Channel 2 and just having a new setting around me, working with new people, new opportunities, a new platform. And it's not apples to apples here, but I just think anyone who gets in a new situation, they get this jolt of energy, and I think it's natural. And even maybe the people here that I work with that have been here at Channel 2 for a while, they can feed off of that energy, and maybe that's what's happening at One Bills Drive.
For sure.
Yeah, that's a great point. And just to expand on that a little bit, just for Joe to see, you know, the player perspective, when you do have that energy, whether it's from new faces or a new offense or a new coach, that energy carries over into competition. Now, these guys, of course, it's knives out in that I want to win the job over you. But the spirit of camaraderie, the spirit of excitement really compels everybody to do their best, to not make mistakes, to lift each other up. And, you know, I think that might kind of answer a question that a lot of people think about. Is it fake energy just for the sake of having it? No, it's real. And can the byproduct of that lead to wins? I think it does, because that energy, that excitement really pushes other people. John, what's your take? Do you think that that type of energy, sustained and real, can have a positive effect in the W column?
I think it can. You know, it's maybe also in the bucket of does culture, the buzzword since Sean took over, how much does that ultimately result into wins versus losses? But I think there is something to it. But at the end of the day, you know, you either have the talent or you don't. And there is such a fine line between good, great, okay. It's not like the guys you don't see on the field are bad players by any stretch of the imagination. And we understand that there might be a talent drop-off from what, especially at certain position groups, this team has had in years past. Can they elevate? Can they be schemed up? Can they ride that wave like in 2017? Not the most talented team during the drought, but they're the one that broke it. And you never just know how different things outside of the X's and O's can ultimately lead to those wins and losses. And maybe that energy or that newness or trying to take advantage of new opportunities that some of these new guys have, maybe that will ultimately present those one or two moments in games that oftentimes swing the pendulum.
Yeah, I think the biggest concern that I have about all of that newness and the energy and when and will it equate to wins is just what is the runway they have? You know, when Tom Brady, when they were transitioning that roster year over year and new wide receivers and blah, 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 and they would lose the first couple games of the season, the rest of the East wasn't very good. The rest of the conference wasn't very good. And now the AFC is just a juggernaut. We're doing a three-part series on all the other divisions. We just did the North, and it's just every team almost in every division is coming for you. And I just don't know if they go on an early season skid, I'm just not sure how much runway they've got. You know, Sean McDermott has said in the past many times, they obviously glow and kind of beam over each other, McDermott and Bean. And he just has talked about how good of a job Brandon Bean has done with the roster. I think he said something even recently just about how good this roster is. You know, when you look at the Bills going into this season and what we've seen so far, is there an area on this roster that you think maybe Brandon Bean could have done a little bit better, just maybe with what's out there, what he missed on, maybe a guy that went a day earlier than Bean wanted him to? Is there a position group or anything like that that you feel like maybe he could have shaped a little better?
I'm going to say the two position groups I think could still use a not minor, but a not seismic, but a substantial addition would be wide receiver and pass rusher. And that is the conversation. Wow. Honestly, I think that I've kind of said for a couple of years now, even when they had Stephon Diggs, you kind of knew Gabe Davis wasn't the consistent number two guy that you wanted. And you wanted maybe whether through the draft or whatever, when you see teams like Cincinnati and Miami and Philadelphia have these 1-2 punches, the San Francisco 49ers as well, even the Dallas Cowboys with Brandon Cooks as well. You see all these 1-2 punches and you felt like the Bills were a little bit behind in that capacity. And then you get rid of Diggs and Davis and everyone, and you're filling them with Valdes-Scantling and Chase Claypool and guys that are they're trying to kind of find their footing again in the league here in this situation. So do I think he missed? No, I think this was just kind of a take your medicine. We're going to do it by the collective type of year. And then maybe next year he'll put his eggs in a wide receiver basket again. And then pass rusher, it was a position group that I actually think for the better part of last season was maybe the most consistent at disrupting the quarterback. But then even Leonard Floyd kind of fell off at the end and Epinesa wasn't the same. And some of these guys were in and out and they didn't produce the pressure the same way. And then you lose a guy like Leonard Floyd, who was, again, their most productive pass rusher, even with kind of slowing down at the end. And you didn't really replace him with anyone. You just brought back A.J. Epinesa and things like that. Now you're counting on Epinesa and Rousseau and a 35, 36-year-old coming off an ACL, Von Miller, to be better, for that pass group to be even maybe just the same. So those are the two position groups. I don't want to say he missed, because who knows? Maybe Javon Solomon will be a nice little addition in the rotation and get you a handful of sacks. You just never know. But again, those are two positions that I think across the league at some of the best teams and Super Bowl contenders. You have premier athletes, you have premier players. They are the best players in your team. And I think this Bills roster, the best players of their team are maybe elsewhere.
It's good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The only thing I would say is you can hide a little bit better at receiver if you've got a top four or five that are really plug and play and your philosophy matches it. But if your defensive end position or your edge position doesn't have a marquee guy, that scares me. You know, a guy that can break a play when you need it, bring the quarterback down, a big splash play in second quarter, change the momentum of the game. I like Rousseau. I like Epinesa. Yeah, for what it's worth, I like Von Miller. Just I'm concerned about them getting to the passer. Now, Rousseau's great on setting the edge for run is great, and you can see it. But we got to get to the guy, 7 yards behind the ball. And I would agree with you. I don't put a lot of faith in the rookie, Javon. There's just so much to learn. And these tackles are a different deal at this level. I don't care where you played in college. There's only 64 of them, and these guys are good. Even the worst ones are really damn good. It's not like in college where, I'll play against 3 or 4 good guys. It's just not the same. So that position group, I've said, is my biggest concern. But sticking with the wide receiver group, do you get the feeling that we know who the top five are from what McDermott put out or what Bean put out? Do you think it's settled?
The social media clip from last week where they're like, oh, we got stuff to be excited about. And they threw out the video with the five guys, of which were Samuel, Shakir, Coleman, Hollins, and then Valdez-Scantling, which
MVS.
Left a spot. So, which was interesting. I don't know. What were your takeaways? That had to be like, we were all like, did you see this video? That's how we were acting. How were you guys acting when you saw it?
I would say those are the obvious five. And Mac Hollins is someone whose name repeatedly was brought up that maybe when he was signed, you're thinking, oh, whatever. He's maybe the sixth guy in the competition. But I actually would maybe say he's more solidified because of his special teams abilities and things like that than maybe even a guy like MVS. I'm not saying he's not going to make the team, but I just for argument's sake, I think the MVS, the KJ Hamlers, the Chase Claypools, those are the guys in that rounding out group that are the ones probably on the bubble. But I will say this, and we're not allowed, say first team, second team, third team in these types of practices. But I noticed the collective was getting opportunities, and they were getting opportunities up and down the ladder. So to me, they might have put that out there, and they certainly are the most obvious and likely front runners, I would say, at this point in time. But I the ones that I think are the most solid would be Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, and Keon Coleman. Beyond that, I think the other two, Mac Hollins and MVS, certainly would be the next two that I would project to make the team and be in the mix as well. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it's impossible. And this, they're not the same, but it's like Kelvin Benjamin wasn't an absolute set it and forget it type of guy at one point. OJ Howard was another guy that was brought on. Now, he was dealing with injuries. MVS wasn't. But some of these guys that are larger names that maybe at this point going into the break before training camp were thought to be, I'm going to make my 53 projection, and these guys definitely are going to make it. They paid them a decent amount of money, and we know what they've done before. And then you get through camp in the preseason, and you're like, oh, that guy wasn't separating the same way, or he wasn't consistent catching the football, or why is he playing in the third quarter of the third preseason game? And you're like, oh, okay, it all makes sense when the initial roster comes out. Because you also have to know, and John, you understand this, it's not only the best five receivers or six receivers, they also have to complement each other. So who in that other group is it? Chase Claypool's a big, big body guy. How many of those do they have in that group? KJ Hamler, if healthy, is a big downfield burner. How many guys do they have like that on this type of roster? Those are also types of the things with the mixing and matching for Joe Brady when he's making up a game plan. Since it's not going to be 160 targets to Stephon Diggs, you're going to mix and match and try to scheme up different guys and find the best matchups, and that's why you need to have a diversified group at that wide receiver position.
Yeah, we've come a long way from the Smurfs. It seems like most of these guys are looking Josh Allen in the eyes, which is something Josh Allen has never had. And then he's got Dawson and Dalton Kincaid out there with him, and it's just like everybody's 6'4", 6'5", which is crazy. Do you feel it? It's funny to me to just kind of put a bow on that, just that video. I haven't seen a hype video from the Bills like that ever, I don't think, before training camp, outside of like the big names, Josh, Diggs, right? Like the guys. For them to put that kind of backing from a social media standpoint behind those five, it just was, because I agree with you. I feel like there's the top three, and then it gets a little murky, and then it's like, well, what's happening after that? And it's about Fitz. But is there still time? I guess two-part question. There's a great expectation, or at least inference, from a lot of us that do this as a hobby, those of us that are not professionals like you guys, that feel like they're going to keep six, that it's going to be six, and they'll throw some dudes in the practice squad, Justin Shorter, Andy Isabella, yada, yada, yada. Do you feel like, first part of the question, do you feel like there's room for seven on this roster, seven wide receivers? And I think the better question is as much as they're like, look, these are the five, hypothetically, these are the ones we're promoting right now, is there room for some of those, for a Justin Shorter, for some of those guys to maybe unseat an MVS, to unseat a Mac Hollins, as hard as it might seem to be?
I haven't done my 53 projection. One thing that will be interesting and unique to the roster construction this year as opposed to the past is the new kickoff rule. And I know special teams is not fun to talk about, but I always tell people, hey, when you're looking to fill out 48, 49, 50, 52, or whatever it may be of the roster, special teams is the difference maker. And that's why some players that become the preseason darlings still don't make the team, because they don't really have a role in special teams.
Yeah.
Seven wide receivers, especially with this new kickoff rule, I'm not sold. I have to look at it, but it wouldn't surprise me if they'd maybe even shift to four tight ends. That would maybe suit a different role from a special team standpoint. I'm not saying that's the direction that they go, but if we're going to add from what the way the roster was constructed in offensive weapons wise, I think you got the three tight ends that you know for sure. But if it's between seven wide receivers or a fourth tight end, I think from a special team standpoint, you'd probably go four. I think they probably go three tight ends, and they probably go six wide receivers again. And maybe it's linebacker or safety or defensive back that maybe is the one that gets an extra spot with these new kickoff rules.
Quick pivot. And just because you were in present, and I don't know how much you could share. Did you get to see them practice any of the new kickoff stuff?
We did, yes.
And can you share anything?
Anything?
Was it awkward? Were you like, man, they're really messed up, they don't know what they're doing? Or was it like, oh, this might make sense?
No. They knew it. I'll be honest with you. Like, I usually zone out during special teams because it's like I'm watching it. And then I was standing next to a couple people, and they were like, oh, look, this is the new kickoff rule. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that is right. It's just interesting. One little thing just of note is that I believe Sal Capaccio was discussing was this idea of, because you can't move until the other people, till the ball is caught, are you looking back at your player catching the ball and taking your eyes off of the defender who's about to start charging at you? Or do you try to do it off of hearing them catch it? Or is there some sort of signal across the unit? That's such a small little thing that I didn't certainly bring into consideration, but from a technical standpoint, if you're facing up, John knows you're facing up, I think it's probably a lot harder to square if you have to completely turn your shoulders again when the defender isn't doing that as well. So I couldn't, and honestly I didn't pay detailed enough attention to appropriately, even if I could, give you the ins and outs of how the Bills plan on attacking this new thing. But I just think it's going to be a lot more fascinating to watch, maybe even in preseason games, of like, oh, I'm not going to go get my beer or go to the bathroom during the kickoff. I'm actually going to watch this, and then I'll wait till the third team gets in or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, I would say that nothing is set in stone right now. They're probably looking at all kinds of film from the other league on how they do it and just being poised and ready to adapt. They've got to. Without actually having your own film, your own performance to look at, judge, you know, you just got to beg, borrow, and steal right now. That would be my best guess. They might even be reaching out and consulting with people that have been doing it, right? Because there was it the XFL, the USFL, the UFL, or whatever league was. I mean, I can't follow those leagues anymore. But all those coaches, it's a tight fraternity, right? If you call one coach, you know, they're going to answer the call. And yeah. and then they're going to give you an indication, because they all want to make it back into the NFL by and large.
Yeah, for sure.
John, I want to talk a little bit about the running game. So obviously we.
Two times in one show. This never happens. Like, what is happening?
Yeah,
we lost you, John. You're back. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's I tell you, I've been on the phone with my guy for a while, and it's a challenge. So it's no fun.
You can start off a running game redo.
Yeah, running game. So the best way to complement this wide receiver room now is to have a good running game, a good running attack. Are you getting any inkling? Are you getting any understanding about any modification or philosophy to the running game that might lead to a steadier, more consistent first and 10, second and medium type of running game?
You know, it's tough. Shorts, T-shirts. The trenches are the one area that are during OTAs and minicamp that are really the ones you almost kind of just go back to the next levels, because you can't really tell. They're not doing anything because they're not really doing contact here. I would say the one thing with the running backs that stood out to me, and maybe this is also a product of that point in the offseason program, a lot of balls are being caught out of the backfield with a variety of running backs. And I think that was a point of conversation maybe in years past of, they need to do better in the screen game. They need to work the balls to the wide receivers. James Cook is proficient at pass catching. Let's get him involved more. And then you still just didn't see it a whole lot. And I'm not saying something I saw in May and June is going to translate come September, October, November. But I think they got the personnel. And it's not just James Cook. I think Ray Davis and Ty Johnson and others, Darrington Evans, if he happens to, you know, make a flash, these are all guys that can definitely do that well. And maybe this just diversifies, once again, another position group to allow you to say, hey, when this person's on the field, I still don't know exactly what's going to happen, and open things up. So not as much, I can't answer to necessarily any differentiation in terms of scheme and the way they're going to attack the run game. But it stood out to me almost every day I was out there just noticing, oh, that guy caught a pass. So that guy out of the backfield caught a pass, and that guy caught a pass. And just something, again, maybe it's a product of shorts and a helmet, or maybe it's honestly something that Joe Brady would like to get more in the mix.
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think Joe and I would agree, and Jerry as well, that over the course of the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, they really weren't getting the ball to the running backs, you know, through the air very often. We didn't take advantage of that. And you see it a lot around the league. So I think it's a really nice pivot. And that might be exactly, when we talk about the running game, we're talking about the check down, the running back getting out in the flat. Thurman was brilliant at it, right? So I think that might satisfy an aspect of the running game, so to speak, from more of a drop back look.
Yeah, it's an extension, right? I mean, who cares if you're second and seven, second and six, if you did it running it up the middle, cutting it off the edge, or if it's a dump down or a swing out of the backfield. It doesn't really matter. And I think they all can provide opportunities to set things up for later as well. And again, it doesn't mean that James Cook has to be the one in the backfield, and, you know, or Ty Johnson or Ray Davis or whatever it may be. All of them have the ability to not only catch it, but do something once they get it. And you're going to hear, and we already have so much, and you heard it a lot under Dabes as well, of matchups. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, when you look at the collective at the wide receiver position, and then you look at what they have with the multiple tight end sets, and now with proficient pass catchers out of the backfield, they can really dial some things up to keep you on your toes from a defensive standpoint, when you're not really, from a personnel, saying this is the guy we have to focus on and this guy's the guy we have to focus on. It might just have to be, we got to be ready for everything.
Yeah, that's good. Talking with John Scott from Channel 2 here in Buffalo. I got you for a couple more minutes. Before I ask you just kind of like the final little question or two, why don't you go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you, both on Twitter. You're a great follow. Yeah, let everybody know where they can find you, get your content, you know, just all your stuff.
Yeah, X, Twitter, whatever we're doing these days, at John Scott TV, J-O-N, Scott TV. WGRZ.com, our YouTube page. We're putting a lot of longer form stuff, whether it's with Vic Carucci or amongst ourselves, Jonathan Acosta and Lindsay Moppert, with observations and stuff. Obviously, this is the notorious, if you cover the Bills, you're taking off a lot of vacation. So we're kind of navigating the who's going to take their week or two off now. It might be slowed down a little bit here, but we're already talking about setting up our coverage leading up to things at Fisher at the end of July. And and then once we hit the fall, Sports Talk Live Mondays at 7:30 on Channel 2. I don't know exactly how it's going to look, but it's a 30-minute free flowing show where we'll touch on a lot of the topics that I'm sure you and everybody else will be talking about either going into games or after.
Exactly. It's interesting. So you coming from Ohio, and I lived in Ohio for 13 years, Ohio. Yeah, that's right. I creeped your Instagram page to get your picture for the show and saw you were at OSU Stadium. And I was like, oh, well, there we go. So we got that going for us. You didn't grow up a Bills fan like I did. You didn't play for the Bills like John did. So there's a lot of homerism, you know, that comes with, well, I'm a fan, and I don't begrudgingly, or I don't like try to pretend that I'm not a fan. I'm a fan. I talk about the Bills as a fan. And if you're a fan and you want to listen, then listen to me pine on about the Bills as a fan, right? But there's been a lot of conversation about Joe Brady when he took over last year, and we were talking about the running game and, you know, the guys coming out of the backfield, but there was an efficiency change, just as it pertained to the run game and the Buffalo Bills offensively, which a lot of people going into this year are now like, oh, you know, this is going to be really great and it's going to be better. And I'm having a hard time with this idea of running the football is better than having Josh Allen 2020, Josh Allen 2021, who's throwing darts all over the football field and crushing defenses. I it's hard for me to get there. And I don't know if that's the fan in me. I don't know if that's just the high flying football lover in me. But I would love to hear just kind of your take. Like, do you see a path to the run game being more proficient for the Buffalo Bills as an offense, better than we've ever seen it, I guess is the way that I would say it. Or is it just this the right time with the question marks with the wide receivers, the question marks with the defense? Is this the right time to be more of a run-centric offense?
I think it's the right time to look different, but I still believe, and I've been saying it for years and years and years, you don't want to take the ball out of the best player maybe in the league on the planet. You don't want to take it out of his hands more times than you need to. Yes, right. There's complimentary football. You don't want them to pin their ears back and just be chasing Josh and bulldoze in the front all the time, right? So you have to have that physical element as well. But just look at the teams also that win the Super Bowl. They're not a run first, run heavy type team. Yes, Isaiah Pacheco, people are like, oh, look how hard he runs. Then look at his stat line. It's like 65, 75 yards on 15 carries. That's no different than what you're really getting out of the Buffalo Bills. San Francisco, the outlier because you have Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. But all of these other teams, even New England, it's not like they're handing the ball off in their heyday 25, 30 times. That version of football is not winning football. It's not the way that things are done this day and age. Even look at the Baltimore Ravens. You have arguably the greatest running quarterback of all time. And yeah, they bring on Derrick Henry, and they've had good running attacks, but they've learned and got better a year ago by throwing the football to Zay Flowers and throwing it to Odell Beckham and throwing it to Mark Andrews. All these teams don't look the same. Yeah, Baltimore goes through Mark Andrews as their number one. And the Kansas City Chiefs go through Travis Kelce now. And you look at what the 49ers do. Yeah, they have a great dual threat, best running back in football, but you also have Debo and Ayuk and Kittle and all of that. It doesn't have to look the same for every single team here, but I think that the idea of if you have an elite all-time quarterback, you let that guy run the show and make him be the decision maker and the playmaker, and that's usually when the best results will happen. So I hope that the Bills don't teeter the scale to more run than pass. And if I'm being completely honest, Joe Brady's not an idiot. This is his second opportunity as a offensive coordinator. And the easiest way to make it his second one, he doesn't last long, is by not allowing Josh Allen to carry the torch for him. I heard Joe say once to me that, hey, I have the easiest job in football. I'm the quarterback's coach for Josh Allen. He knows what he has here, and he's going to ride that horse until the wheels fall off.
Love it.
Wait a minute. Horses have wheels?
I was thinking the carts.
It's got to be the hooves. Maybe the fetlocks give out. I mean, I grew up riding horses. I had to throw fetlock in there. John and Joe, I agree with you. I agree with you. We also talk about how Josh might have this feeling that he has to play hero ball, that it's always in his lap. And I think if you can develop a reliable run game, a philosophy that works, and you game plan it properly to your opponent, I think that brings down the temperature of Josh. So when you get into those moments, he doesn't feel abandoned, that he doesn't feel he has to do it all, that he knows that that where they are in the moment, that they got to this moment where he can control the moment, wasn't because it was only on his shoulders, but it was because of everybody. So there's a psychological aspect to the running game as well. And additionally, you got to have him believe that there's more to this than just him, and everybody has to believe the same.
Yeah, that's super good. John, we appreciate you so much for joining us, giving us a couple minutes of your time. We kept you longer than I said we would. I apologize for that, but we would absolutely love to have you back. Any final thoughts, any words, anything that you got for us before I get us out of here?
No, don't worry about taking my time. This is like my dinner break. It's the lull period of time. I got my Rachel's from around the corner, and I'm all set to go here. Yeah, this was a blast. It's fun talking Bills football. And again, the conversation is so different this time because we're talking about a lot of different people. And I think what you always have to remember is, the wide receivers may not be as good or this and this. It's what the three of us just said. You have Josh Allen. And I think this is a big year. I think a big reasonable conversation is this is the next step for Josh. And you saw Mahomes kind of take it, and they're always going to be compared, was what is Mahomes going to look like when you don't have Tyreek Hill? And that wasn't easy. It didn't look good to start. And some would even argue their offense didn't look good almost through their latest Super Bowl run. But they found ways to make plays and found ways to elevate some of these more what people would probably call more marginal type guys to make them into Super Bowl champions. And Josh Allen is now being tasked with that for the first time in his career since he's elevated to superstardom, to say, hey, you not only have to be great, but you have to make these other guys great. And I think he's up to the task, but I think that will be the story for this team this season.
Awesome. Excellent conversation. Exactly. Fantastic. Excellent conversation. John, thank you so much. Everybody tune in to John Scott on WGRZ Channel 2 in Buffalo, and please follow him on all of his social media. You will not regret it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for On the Beat, brought to you on the Overreaction Sports Network. My name is Joe Miller. That is John Feeney. The guy below us is John Scott. Love you. Appreciate you. We'll see you next time. Go Bills.
Go Bills.